I'm Ingrid Busson-Hall.
And I'm Kathleen Merrigan.
Welcome to This Is My Silver Lining, the show where we pull together the strongest threads of our humanity, courage, kindness, compassion, and gratitude.
Our guests explore their toughest moments and how rising to the challenges led them to discover unexpected opportunities, connection, and community.
Losing a child is the nightmare no parent can ever imagine living through. Heather Strotter and her husband, Brian, have lived this nightmare. Heather and Brian's two sons, Ethan and Jake, were born 15 months apart. Jake, their youngest, was a happy, healthy infant who seemed intent on beating his brother with every milestone. All that changed when Jake was 8 months old. He had a seizure that never truly stopped. The young family temporarily relocated to Boston. Thankfully, Brian's family was close by and could help care for big brother Ethan, as Jake spent 117 days at Boston Children's Hospital, one of the world's foremost pediatric centers. Test after test yielded more questions than answers. Jake's condition was a mystery. When they finally returned home, life for the Strotter family in Saratoga Springs, New York, was forever changed. Jake needed constant care, but they all adapted and created a new normal. And then, when he was just 4 years old, Jake passed away. In the dark days that followed, Heather knew she still needed to be Jake's mom in the world. She wanted to continue telling his story and for him to have a lasting impact. Within weeks, Heather and Brian started Jake's Help from Heaven, a nonprofit organization that creates opportunities for individuals with complex medical needs and disabilities to thrive. In the last 13 years, they have raised and made grants of over $1.6 million to help families and kids get the support and equipment they need. Jake's life was far too short, but his light and legacy shine brightly in those who have received a helping hand. Heather, thank you so much for joining us on This Is My Silver Lining.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
That was a beautiful introduction, by the way. I'm almost crying.
Well, thank you so much, Heather, for joining us. We like to start by asking our guests how they think about silver linings. And there are some times when it's hard to even ask the question. And this is one of those times for sure. I mean, you've been through incredible trauma. Do you still believe that every cloud has a silver lining? And if so, how do you find those in your own life?
So to be totally honest, I do. And I didn't always, for sure. Like it took me, I would say, years to kind of change my mindset to actually be able to think that there is this sort of silver lining. And I do, part of how I get there is because even though I lost Jake, I'm still Ethan's mom, right? So I have to, you know, as moms, we want to be the best versions of ourselves, right? We want to be models for our kids and we want to help them be great humans. And I still had to do that. So I couldn't be stuck in the sorrow. I had to find the good. And in those early days after Jake passed, I just thought about him and he was all good. He was just young and was dealt such a horrible hand in life, really, just because of the sickness and the seizures and just, you know, everything was hard, but somehow he got up every day and he lived his life and he did it, you know, with like perseverance and dignity and grace. And I always sort of thought if he could do that, then I can do that too. And, you know, it's easier said than done sometimes, but for sure, I think that the loss of him was horrible and is still horrible. And it's still just, you know, it's sometimes hard to even believe that that is my story, but it is. And out of it came a lot of good things. Out of it came this ability to understand what other families need and how we can help and to sort of provide the light and grace for them. So that's where I sort of try to stay.
You went through a really long period of uncertainty after Jake's initial seizure, not really getting any answers. I think one of the things that you said when we spoke, Heather, was that the doctors actually would tell you, listen, this is hard to hear, but the fact that he's not testing positively for any number of these things is good news, because those are all horrible things and you don't want him to have that. But ultimately you didn't get answers about his condition, and he needed intense care. And as you said, you were also, you know, a wife and mother to Ethan. And as moms, I think it's fair to say we give so much of ourselves and kind of neglect ourselves at some level to make sure that our children have everything that they need, that our loved ones have everything they need. How did you navigate this really, really challenging period of time?
So it's interesting because, you know, looking back, and I think with all things, big and small, right? Like when you're in the middle of it, it's just the life you know, and it's just good or bad, right? Like, so you get up and you live your life, regardless of when you're in a really good time, like in the highs, it makes it a little easier, and in the lows makes it harder, but you still just have to, I don't know. I don't know that that's always been my personality, but to some degree, it's like you just kind of get up in the morning and you put one foot in front of the other and this is your life. You know, those 117 days in the hospital, they were brutal, you know, and they were brutal in the middle of it. And they are brutal in my memory because it was hard to keep up hope. It was hard to sort of think there was going to be this light at the end of the tunnel because there were no answers and there still were no answers. And even now it's hard sometimes to still know that there was no diagnosis for Jake, right? Like it's all these years later and, you know, because people will still say like, oh, well, what did he have? Like, why did this happen? And there's no answer. Like there's no good answer. You know, there's just, and I feel sort of sometimes lame saying it, but it was just bad luck. The poor kid had really bad luck. He was born with something like really rare and it showed up when he was 8 months and we don't know what it is. And that's just hard, right? Like it's hard to wrap your head around why, like the whys. And I think for me, I just can't get stuck there, right? I just, because there is no answer. So there just has to be this acceptance. And it's this sort of acceptance of, you know, this is it. This is what it was. And I hate sort of saying this sometimes because I do feel like it's a little cliche, but I feel like there was a reason, like his life was valid. And maybe that silver lining is that he made me a much better person. Like he made me very self-aware of what other people are experiencing and not just so, you know, it's so easy in our lives, right? To just worry about what's on our plate and worry about what's on our to-do list or what we're going through. And Jake and his passing is a constant reminder to me that that everyone's got something they're going through. And I'm not saying I'm good at this all the time, but the world is better when we try to see what other, like be empathetic and go through and see what other people are doing and not just live our own little, you know, to-do lists and stuff.
Yeah. So much of that is like looking around and realizing that you're part of a bigger community, right? Like there's a bigger world. So how did you, in that situation, you're surrounded by family and doctors and friends, and I'm sure everyone wanted to help. How did you learn about that? Or how did you learn about your community through Jake's illness? I'm sure it was stronger than you had even realized before.
So when he was in the hospital, it really, you know, Ethan was 2 years old and we literally like picked up in the middle of the night and were in Boston. So it was just, and you know, the lucky part of that was that, you know, we had moved from Boston. Brian's family was in Boston. We had friends in Boston. So we had friends who had two-year-olds. So we could put Ethan into like a daycare program so that he could be like, so that he wasn't in the hospital all day, every day with us. There were these like moments where all of a sudden we were never people who would always like ask for help, but it didn't become about asking for help. It just became about accepting it and knowing that we had people who would just jump in. And, you know, I had, you know, one of my best friends who's, you know, still lives in the area of Boston. She would just show up and she'd be like, you know, I'm going to take Ethan to the aquarium or to the museum, or we're going to go to a park. And all you could really do was smile and say, thank you. Right. Like there wasn't this, you know, you just had to accept it. And then another piece of that is I remember after Jake passed, and it was like, it's just horrible, right? Everything is hard. And anything that any energy I had to save for Ethan. So like, it sort of would be like after he would go to sleep or when he was in school, I was just kind of undone because I could be, because he wasn't there to see it. But we had a great friend of mine who actually was at the launch party yesterday, and I hadn't seen her in a long time, but she lives here in Saratoga, and she started one of those food trains. And it was such a, like, it was before food trains were kind of a thing. Like, now I feel like there's food trains all the time, right? Someone has a baby and you have a food train. And, but it was before that. And I will say that Brian and I did not cook a meal for probably 5 months after Jake passed. So much so to the point where we were like, thank you guys so much. You're amazing. I want to cook dinner.
The freezer's full.
I want a little choice over what I'm having tonight. Yeah. You know? But it really was remarkable. It was really just every night someone would show up and leave on our porch like a meal. And sometimes they'd send dessert. And, you know, it was just kind of this thing. And it's such a, I don't want to say it's a small thing because it was such a huge thing to us, but it was just this unexpected rallying of people. And some of the people on that food train were not even, I didn't know them. Like, they just lived in Saratoga, or they knew of our story, or they just were just people who wanted to help and they made a meal, or they, you know, sent over a pizza. Like, it was really special. And it was just one of those ways where just there's so many ways that you can make a difference for someone. And they don't always have to be big ways. They can be the little. It could be, you know, someone showing up with like a cup of coffee when you need it, you know? And I think that is, those are important things to remember, I think.
One of the things that you've done, which is so beautiful after a time when the community rallied around you and Brian and Ethan, Heather, is you actually created a new community, right? A community through the work that you do with Jake's Help from Heaven, a community that didn't quite exist for you in this way in terms of being connected with other families who share the journey of having a kid with significant disabilities and medical needs. Tell us about that, because I think that is such a beautiful extension of this story.
It was, you know, I sometimes I laugh at myself when I say this, but it was a different world when Jake was alive and sick. It was kind of before Facebook and these kind of avenues in which you can make the world small, right? You know, so today I know a lot of people in social media that I don't actually know, but I know they have kids that are like Jake, and they there's a community there. When Jake was small, there wasn't any of that. And it just was this, I didn't know anybody who had a family like mine. And it was very isolating sometimes, right? Because it's just, you know, Ethan, when you have two healthy kids, you can stick them in the car and go to the park and you meet people at the park and you do stuff. I couldn't do that with Jake. Like, I couldn't, it was just harder. Like, he had therapies he always had to be home for and those kind of things. And I just remember feeling so, I don't want to say alone, but like just like no one knew my day. No one knew my like struggles. And one of the things that we wanted to do with Jake's Help from Heaven, beyond the, you know, our real purpose is to be, you know, to improve the quality of life, to pay for things insurance doesn't, to just really help in that way. But what has developed and what I almost am most proud of is that we are this community, right? There are people who rally, who I can connect, who I can speak to about those dark days, those worries, what happens if my kid has a seizure again? What happens, you know, that insurance isn't paying for this? What can I do? And just that connection and just knowing that there's other families like yours. You know, I think that is one of the things that has really come out of Jake's Help from Heaven, other than the obvious ways in which we have helped people, you know, because not to minimize that, but there's this whole other connection, you know. And even at the launch party last night, there was a mom who came who lost her daughter, who I had, you know, we've worked with for years. And she just was like, I just knew I had to be here to support you. And it was just great. You know, it was just this, there is just this feeling of having walked in each other's shoes. And while some people are very, you know, kind and supportive, there's nothing like the community of people who do know what you've been through, who just can kind of give you a hug and be like, I got you. You know, I've been there. So, and honestly, I've said this, like, in some ways, I'm happy to be that person for others, but I don't know that they always recognize how they still are that person for me, right? Like, I've said this before, like, some of what we do with Jake's Help from Heaven, it's a little selfish because I get so much out of it. I get so much, I don't know, I just know that world so intimately. And I miss being Jake's mom. Like I miss, as hard as his life was and as much as it was with, you know, therapies and medicines and like in doctor's visits. And there was so much about it that was hard. Like I became really good at it. Like it just was, it was a world I knew, right? Like I was this fierce advocate for my son and I would fight with the best doctors if I didn't think they were giving him enough attention. And that's a part of me that I don't get to be anymore. So I, being able to be connected with families that were like mine is as good for me as it is for them, I think.
Heather, how did the families find you?
So in the beginning, you know, in the beginning, it was like almost like we had to advertise, you know what I mean? Like I had brochures that we put in like doctors' offices all over, you know, so we do 100-mile radius of Saratoga Springs. So I would do mailings, you know, I'd send out brochures, I would drop them off. I would, you know, we were connected through Jake, like with some doctors and with some therapists and, you know, pediatric physical therapy and the Epilepsy Foundation of Northeastern New York. So we started with kind of his world and he had gone up to a special needs preschool. So we started where we knew there were other kids with disabilities or sick kids, or we kind of started there. And then in all honesty, like once the word started spreading, like once we kind of on Facebook would show that we had helped some people, it was like, oh, wait, can you help my kid? And it sort of snowballed into, or, you know, one social worker would be like, oh, they provided this for us. You know, I have another family, or they would tell their social worker friends kind of thing. Or, you know, I mean, it just, after I would say probably, I don't know, a year or two, it really just kind of developed a life of its own. And we do help families over and over again. It's not like we're a one and done. So we do have some families who, you know, we have supported in different ways for the last 13 years. So that's kind of great too.
Oh, yeah. You build such a relationship, I'm sure.
And tell us a little bit about what kind of help these families are coming to you for.
So we help in kind of three major ways. One is a sort of our general grant, which is anything from, you know, an adaptive stroller or an adaptive bike, like a piece of equipment, or it could be, you know, in some ways, and sometimes, you know, there's older teenagers or young adults who still need diapers, for instance, and what Medicaid covers are really cheap and really ineffective. And the families, you know, they just don't work essentially. So that we have some families that we do diapers, like adult diapers for their kids every year. You know, that's kind of, it's not glamorous, but it's really expensive and it's a way to help. And sometimes it's, you know, sensory equipment. And so there's things where it's like items, right? Like just sort of general items that make their life, we kind of call it medically necessary, like, which is sort of obvious, like they need it for their illness or for their disability. We also sort of say medically convenient. It might not be absolutely necessary, but it certainly makes their life better. And not only their life better, but like that of their family. So then it's kind of everybody's life is improved. Another big piece of our puzzle is medical travel reimbursement. So that is, you know, all of Jake's doctors were in Boston. So even when we came back to Saratoga Springs, we were going back to Boston all of the time. And it's kind of tricky because it's not just like get in the car, drive, have your appointment, come back. Sometimes when your kid is that challenged, you know, you're seeing the specialist. And I would always want Jake to be like, you'd want them to see him at his best, right? You know, because that's how they can figure out what's working, what's not working.
Right. Not he like wasn't his he's best tired, he's exhausted and needs a nap. And,
he's tired. Yeah. His schedule is kind of off. You know, he hasn't had his meals. So we would often go out the day before so that he could be well rested, you know, all of those things. So we pay for, we have to do a hotel stipend, a food stipend, any kind of transportation. So just to help families not only get to where the specialists are, but be able to spend the time that they need there. And then we have a technology grant, which is, We have a lot of families who, you know, if their kids are nonverbal, iPads and some, not just the iPad, but the apps, like there's Proloquo to Go, there's Touch Talk, there's all these different apps that are very expensive, you know, between like $250 or $300, but they provide truly a voice, like they allow nonverbal kids to communicate. So that's the other sort of piece that we do. So those are the three major ways in which we help. We always like to say, though, there's not like, we're not an organization that has like, we do this, but we don't do that. If you can make a case for it, and it's something that is going to improve you know, the quality of life for your child or for your young adult, you know, because it's not just for children, then we want you to apply and we want to try to help.
I imagine, as you said before, once folks started to hear about this, you know, the needs are really great. There's got to be some tough decisions that you have to make sometimes.
There are. You know, we have an amazing board of directors, and we are, you know, they're a thoughtful group that we sit around the table and we hash these things out. The thing is, we have a couple parameters. So it's 100 miles of Saratoga Springs, so, you know, kind of geographical location. And then we're really focused on congenital or childhood onset. So while we do help adults, it's not, we try to differentiate between, well, some of these things are hard and hard to say no, we try to keep to that congenital childhood onset. So it's not, you know, if you were 22 and hit by a car and now you've got TBI, like a traumatic brain injury, that doesn't fit our mission. It doesn't mean we don't want to help, but we've had to sort of tighten up the parameters a little bit just so that we can kind of stay true to our mission. You know, my husband will always say, like, it's not for like the high school athlete who broke his arm. You know, we're not helping that. We're really helping these childhood illnesses.
Just listening to you talk and hearing your story, I can't help but think about how much we, I guess, as a society kind of fail our caregivers and how critical it is that to support. And it seems like you also take all of that into account. But where do you think more can be done in helping families that are living with these issues or, you know, trying to get by day to day and help and have fun with their other kids and have the energy to take care of their other kids? It's a real challenge.
It's such a challenge, and it's such a, you know, I have a lot of opinions on this, honestly. I do think that we, I'm not sure how much you want
to know. Yeah, I do.
We leave these families, and I will say, you know, post COVID for sure, and just sort of, you know, where the politicalness of the society has gone, like what Medicaid. So these families, you get a Medicaid waiver, right? When your kid has, like Jake had it, you know, he was, you can apply for it and be credited. Our social workers set it up for us. And we were, because of his illness and because of all of the documentation we had, he was entitled to get certain things. The problem, in theory, you know, that sounds perfect, right? Like that sounds like, oh, we live in a society where we care about other people and we take care of them. But the fact is, that's not how it would work. You know, we would be granted sometimes like 56 hours a week of respite care, but there's no one who can do the work. Like there's no one trained to do the work. And the people who you find that are trained, they don't approve. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like on paper, everything seems like it should work, but for whatever reason, we can't make it work. And I see it all the time with these families who are just trying so hard. And that's why I say that Jake's doesn't have like a yes or no, because what we are is what that family needs to get by. And sometimes it's, they just want to be a family, right? Like they have a healthy kid who's playing soccer and they want to be able to go as a family of four. And the sibling wants to be able to watch their brother play soccer. Sometimes it's that easy, but it's so hard. Like it's an impossible feat because you don't have, the wheelchair doesn't go in the grass and the, you know, Medicaid says you get one wheelchair every 5 years. That's fine when you're 20 to 25, but when you're 2 to 7, it's absurd.
Yeah.
Like it's cuckoo,
yeah, that
right?
Makes
like
no
I
sense.
Mean,
right?
Like it makes zero sense. Like why would a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old have the same thing? But those are the rules. So then we come in and say, okay, we understand that that might have worked for you at 2, but for age 3 and age 4 and age 5, we'll swoop in and help you until you can get a new one. You know, and sometimes the chair does work, but you need a stroller that has like the really big wheels so that it can go, you know, on the grass. So there's just so many ways in which, like I said, on paper, it seems like it makes sense. Like someone wrote these rules and it's like, okay, but the common sense factor is so missing. And the humanity and the kindness and the compassion and all of that is just non-existent, you know, and it's the diaper story. It's like, oh, on paper, you know, the 22-year-old who has cerebral palsy and is incontinent, oh, we send, you know, we'll send you 4 cases a month. It's great. But literally they're shaped in a square. They're like one ply tissue paper. They do nothing. So all it is creating more waste in the world, really, you know, because they can't use them. And then the family is spending insane amounts of money on diapers, even though they're not supposed to.
And also time, right? Time that is so incredibly valuable, where you have to jump through hoops and be on calls and be on hold and be bounced around from one place to another to another. And families like yours and the families that you help, I mean, the time is the most valuable thing that you have because you want to spend it with your kids to help them.
I mean, that's 100% it. In my like kind of past life, I was a special ed teacher in Boston, and I was a pretty like fierce advocate for my kids. And I would go to IEP meetings and I would do all of those things. And I was grateful for that experience because when I became Jake that I was fighting for, I had some of the skills, right? And a lot of people don't have the skills of like how you have to fight. And it came in really handy for me because I fought with insurance. I mean, it was like a full-time job.
I was wondering if we could talk about Ethan. I understand Ethan, he was only 5 years old when Jake passed away, and he was actually the one who called 911 that night. And now he's a freshman in college, which I'm sure comes with a whole host of other emotions. But could you talk to us a little bit about Ethan and you know, how his life changed that day and how the loss of his brother really affected him?
So Ethan was definitely, when Jake was alive, just, you know, wanted to be a huge part of his appointments and his therapies. And, you know, sometimes he would watch over the therapists at home, like the PT, and he would just really, you know, he just was protective. So when Jake was gone in those, and I don't know this, you know, whether it was weeks or months, I would say it was probably months, he was very connected still. And, you know, sometimes I'd be putting him to bed and he'd be saying like his prayers or something. And he was always like, you know, take care of Jakey. But then he would be like, or I'd, you know, if he caught me crying or something, he'd be like, Mommy, Jakey's right here. He's like up there. And he'd like point to a corner in his room. And I was kind of like, okay, you know, but I then subsequently like read a lot of stories about when kids are that young, they're so open to everything, right? Like they're not adults who are closed off to the idea that, you know, maybe you can see these spirits or maybe they're really here. Like, you know, like we're just sort of conditioned as adults to think that things are not that way. And he very much, until he learned otherwise or learned that people sort of thought that was weird when he said that, he felt very comfortable being like, no, you know, he's over in his bed because they had shared a room. So he'd be like, no, he's over there, you know? And it was just kind of sweet because it prevented, like for a while, he wasn't like as deep in the sadness like we were, because I think it was a different relationship he had with his brother. Now, as he got older, I think, and he realized that that's not, I don't want to say normal, but it wasn't, you know, he as he became more embarrassed by that, there definitely was a period where he just didn't really want to talk about Jake anymore. Or he didn't like that it made him different. Like he didn't like that he was the kid whose brother died. And I think that I don't want to say that he ignored it or pushed it away, but it became less part of his story, right? It just became less of who he wanted to be associated as. My husband and I always said that Ethan, you know, we don't know who he would have been if this wasn't part of his story, but throughout all, and even right now as a 19-year-old, he is just a very compassionate kid. Like he cares deeply about people and he just cares. And it's nice because it was the one thing, even through like the rough teenage years, he just has this like side of him that I think because of Jake and what he knew we as a family sort of endured. And because of the loss of Jake, like he's just kind. And I do think that's a lot of his brother. I also, this is kind of a funny story. He was in college, his first semester, and he goes to Syracuse, and at Shine Student Center, there was someone from, you know, an autism nonprofit. And he engaged in a conversation with the with the young man who was like manning the booth. And then he, you know, I get a text from him that's like, "Mom, I just made a donation. I met this really great guy, you know, with Autism Speaks or whatever the organization was." He's like, "But, can you Venmo me back? Cause I just made a donation." And I was like, "Well, how much did you donate?" And he's like, "Well, I really wanted to help and I paid for swimming lessons, but I don't have that much money."
Learning.
So I was like, "Buddy,
great.
I love that. Like, but I love that you did that." But I was like, "Your budget is a little different than that. And yes, I will Venmo you, but just so you know, in the future, your budget, you know, it's great to make a donation, but you know, but that kind of speaks to him. He's like, "Well, I wanted to do the hypotherapy because I know Jake covers that. And, but I definitely couldn't afford that. So I did the swim lessons." And I was like, "Oh, buddy."
So, you know,
like, so he understands the world in a different way, I think. It was very sweet. And then he's like, I wanted to do it. But then he's like, can you cover some of that for me? And I was like, okay. So I did. I Venmoed him. Yeah, but
of course you did.
But I do.
Know.
You know, I know, right? I was like, what am I going to say? No, you know, like. But he does have this, like, he sees things that I think other kids don't, you know, and he understands things in that way. And you know, we knew that there was a large impact on him, but I didn't know the degree of which it was until, you know, he wrote his college essay on, like, the opening line was like, "Ethan, call 911. And he wrote about it. And he wrote about, you know, when he couldn't go to, you know, when he had to do things differently, like instead of like going, you know, to watch his brother's baseball game, he had to go watch him at therapy. Like he talked about some of these things that obviously had a huge impact on him. And not that we didn't know, of course we knew, but to hear it from his own words as a, you know, as a 17-year-old high school senior writing his essay really was impactful to my husband and I, you know. And as he gets older, he's more comfortable with it. You know, there was definitely, I would say, between the ages of, I don't know, like 13 and 16, which are, I don't know how old your kids are yet.
Kathleen has a beat on this that I don't yet.
That's not an age without challenges.
Yeah. And teenage boys, as you know, well, that, so I get it.
Yeah, so they come with their own set of, you know, issues, and he just during those stages he didn't want to be different, right? Like he didn't want to be the kid whose brother died, or you know, and sometimes even he was in the beginning he loved going on deliveries and helping, being part of Jake's Help from Heaven, and there was a period there where he was less into it now. But by his senior year in high school, he was doing deliveries on his own and he was bringing his friends. Like he's kind of come full circle. So I think now he's really proud, but I do think there's a piece of him that just wished he still had his brother. And, you know, like all of us, like we learn these lessons to potentially be like these nicer humans. But I always say, I wish I wasn't as nice of a human and I still had my kid, you know, and I think he feels the same way.
Can we talk? I mean, we all experience grief in any number of different ways, but rarely do we embrace the opportunity to talk about grief and our grieving process. And when we talked a few weeks ago, Heather, you said that, you know, you used to be a grief snob, right? That you had a special corner on grief, given the nature,
like a hierarchy.
Yeah, given the nature of your loss. How can we break the taboo on grief and talk about it more openly, and talk to us about your own sort of evolution on how you think about your grief and that of others?
So I definitely thought for many years, you know, I kind of like a grief hierarchy, right? Like, you know, people would be like, "Oh, my mom died." And I was like, "Well, that's the circle of life. You're, you know," I not that I was cold about it, but I was kind of like, "You're not supposed to bury your kid. You're supposed to bury your parents." And I did have a harshness to myself about it. And then there just reached this point where I had to let that go because it wasn't serving me and it certainly wasn't serving others, right? Like it was like this made up rule in my head that because my kid died, that's the worst form of grief. And then it's sort of a weird story, but someone who I don't even know that well, like her dog died. And instead of just doing my typical like eye roll thing, I saw how sad she was. I saw how it completely and utterly crushed her. And I just sort of understood then that, you know, grief is, we all experience it, and there is no hierarchy. There is no, like, it's grief, right? And it's just, it's that feeling of just, right? Like you just, a part of your soul is taken. And whether it's because it's your child who passed or whether it's your dog, that feeling is there and we all experience it. And who the hell am I to say that mine is worse or not? So I really, for me, that became very freeing, and it made me also less lonely, right? Because it's not just that I'm connected to people who've lost a child. I'm connected to everybody because everybody has grief. And even in the conversations I have on my podcast, we talk about how grief isn't, you know, yes, grief is often the feeling you have with the loss of a loved one, but it's also this feeling of just when you thought your life was going to be one way, but it's another way. Like, we grieve things, everybody grieves things. And it just, I think if we use that as an emotion that connects us instead of tears us apart, I just think it can be a, I don't want to say a good thing, but it can be a good thing. It can kind of, it's something that can unify people instead of keep them alone. But that wasn't, this is kind of a recent, you know, revelation. It's not, I haven't been this way my whole life, for sure.
We're all learners.
Could we talk about your podcast? Congratulations. I understand you just launched.
Thank you.
Your podcast yesterday.
Yesterday was the launch day.
All right. Yay. A place of yes.
Yesterday. Yep.
That's fantastic. Yay. Tell us about what inspired you to launch a podcast and tell us what your show is all about.
So there's a couple things. One was, you know, so Jake's Help from Heaven, we've always had sort of this Family Fun Day, which was our primary fundraiser. It's been hugely successful, but it's a ton of work. And I just, there was part of me that just felt like that chapter of fundraising for us had come to an end. And mostly because, you know, kind of post-COVID, it's hard to get people to do events. They're a ton of work and they took so much time of mine that I was like, there's got to be a better way to let the world, like to let people know what we're doing and to share the work that we do and to share the lessons from the work that we do. So in my head, I was kind of like, what if we do a podcast? Not really knowing what that meant, what that, you know, just kind of this idea, you know, like everybody was like, I'm going to have a podcast.
We can relate to that.
Yeah. You know, I was like, let's just do this. And then I didn't even really know what that meant. But then I was fortunate enough to have, you know, a friend who put me in touch with Brightsided, who like produces and does my podcast. But I had this great conversation with Christine, the owner, about what we could do. Like, what is this idea? And it started to take shape and it became clear that we wanted to do something. We wanted to share stories and we wanted to have these conversations that I have had in private for the last 13 years with some of the families I work with and with our board members, and just these universal conversations that people could relate to, but kind of have these private conversations publicly. You know, it is sort of where it became. And we started, you know, I just started inviting families that we worked with as guests. And then I think it has really evolved into conversations about grief. You know, when we started, I didn't know if it was going to be like, you know, a nonprofit, if it was a parenting pot, like we didn't really know what our like niche was. And then it ended up with these conversations being grief, but not necessarily grief in a sad way, grief in this way of like, what do we do with it? Like, what do we, when things happen, similar to yours, right? Like when you're at your low, what is the thing that keeps you going? Why are you like, how do you get ahead of it? And I have so enjoyed doing this. And so yesterday was our launch and we have two episodes live. And then every Thursday, a new one will drop. And it has been a ton of fun and it has been hugely, I almost want to say like therapeutic, right? Like I'm just having these conversations. And one of the things when Jake passed, that was my biggest fear, was that I wouldn't be able to talk about him. Like as a mom, you know, it's like your greatest joy to be able to talk about your kids. And there's that idea of talking about Jake that would sometimes make people uncomfortable and that would break my heart. Like it was a real thing for me. So through Jake's Help from Heaven, it's given me this real ability to keep him very present and talk about him. But now through this podcast, I'm like, it's my job. I have to talk about him. So for me, that feels really good.
I just listened to the first episode with with Hillary, Esme's mom, a family that you've worked with actually for a while. And one of the things that you...
A long time.
Yeah. One of the things that the two of you talk about quite a bit is the set of assumptions that people tend to make about special needs kids, and really it trends towards the negatives, right? Like the things that they can't do or shouldn't do. What do you want our listeners to know about kids like Jake and Esme, and really about the, you know, the courage and the resilience that they have in the world and what they teach you?
You know, it's, I mean, they teach you so much, right? And I think you said it really well. It's people look and they see the wheelchair, or they see, you know, they see that you can't walk, or they see that you can't talk, or that you're too, they see all of the things that make them different than what we think is typical and happy and normal. But they don't see, you know, what I think is remarkable, extra remarkable about these kids is they do everything that typical kids do with so many things in the way, right? You know, like Jake got up every day and it wasn't easy, but he would live his life and he did it, you know, I always said with like grace and dignity. Like I wouldn't have that much. I'd be like a surly person if I had to do all of those things or be in therapy 5 days a week with, you know, and work so hard to like take a step. You know, everything was so hard, but they just do it. And same with Esme. Like Esme is remarkable. You know, she doesn't ever see an obstacle that she can't overcome. And I think that we all could learn from that, right? Because sometimes, not that our lives are easy, but comparatively they are, you know, like a lot of people can get up in the morning and you take your steps to the bathroom and you don't even think about taking those steps. And for some, you know, it's getting up and getting in a wheelchair and doing that, or waiting for someone to pick you up and bring you, like in the case of Jake. You know, they're just, I just think these, it's just so remarkable that the challenges people can go through. And I just love to call attention to that. And I love to call attention to, you know, the reminder of sometimes we think we're having a bad day and it can always be worse, right? And it can, that sounds kind of backwards of what I'm saying, but like, but just, it's not just about the life we live in our little box, right? It's about this greater world. And what we think is so much harder, someone else thinks is easy. Does that make sense, right? Like, you know, or I'm saying that kind of backwards, but I just, it's all perspective. And I think we have to work on this world where people see what people can do and not what they can't. And I think these stories, what I love about what we're doing in A Place of Yes, and the stories you're sharing too, are these, it's those moments in life where you just, you can go either way, and why not go the way of positivity and the way of seeing, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. Like you've got a choice all the time. And sometimes it just seems easy to take the negative choice, but we don't have to. We can take that good choice. And I think that's what a lot of the kids I work with and the young adults who have these challenges, they make the choice every day to face it and to move forward. And we all should do that. It's my soapbox.
Yeah. And I think just hearing the stories is, it inspires us all to do that as well. So it's important to share the story so that other people can hear them and recognize what they've been blessed with and help them with their own challenges.
Conscious of all that you have lost, Heather, what are you most grateful for? And how do you maintain your optimism?
You know, I would say I'm most grateful for, in a weird way, just this life that I lead, right? Like I feel blessed that I got to be Jake's mom. I wish I got to be Jake's mom longer, but it's kind of like the greatest thing I've ever done. You know, it's just, I'm glad I'm the one that got to do it. And I say that about Ethan's mom. You know, I love, you know, as parents, right, you love your kids so much. Like they're your greatest joy. And I love that's been my role here on earth, right? Like I love that I still get to be Ethan's mom. And I, you know, he called me yesterday and we talked for 49 minutes and it was the best 49 minutes of my life. You know, it put me behind everything and I was not ready for stuff, but he calls and I just, you know, when your big kid calls you, I don't care what I'm doing. Nothing else matters. I sit and I talk to him about whatever it is. And it's the best moment of my life, you know, and whatever it is. And it's the kind of cool part as your kid gets older that you have these different relationships, you know, and I'm here for it. I'm here 100% for all the changes in it. And you know, I do wish that my time with Jake was longer, but I am grateful for what I had, and I would do it all again, even knowing the ending, right? Like I would just, it's my greatest joy being their moms.
Heather, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We're so grateful for having this conversation and for the work that you do. Really inspiring. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. That was wonderful. Thank you so much, Ingrid. That was fantastic. What a great person to know. And I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to meet her. She's a strong person that is very focused on finding light in such a difficult situation.
And putting good in the world, which is really what we are all about, shining a light on. It's not all negative news out there. There are people who turn their toughest moments into the best of opportunities to make a better world. So I really admire her courage and her spirit of community. So Kathleen, until next time, keep looking for those silver linings.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to This Is My Silver Lining with us, your hosts, Ingrid Buisson-Hall and Kathleen Merrigan.
This show is edited and produced by the amazing John Corr at Wayfair Recordings, and our original show art is by Alyssa Love. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love hearing these inspirational stories, please follow, rate, and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Please join us again next week when we'll be back with a new episode. We're always looking for silver linings, so if you have one you'd like to share, let us know. You can always find us on Instagram or on our website, thisismysilverlining.com. Be sure to check out the links and resources in our show notes.
Have a great week, and until next time, keep finding those silver linings.